Chapter 2. The Straw That Broke the Camel's Back. Is America in a Downward Cycle? From D.H. Lawrence. Men fight for liberty and win it with hard knocks. Their children brought up easy, let it slip away again, poor fools. And their grandchildren are once more slaves. Secular and biblical scholars have both noticed a pattern throughout human history. All of the world's greatest civilizations have started in some type of bondage, either physical, spiritual, or in most cases, both. This truth becomes apparent through a study of antiquity from a secular and biblical worldview. Either way, and no matter the presuppositions of the scholar, the facts are the same and speak for themselves. Scottish historian Alexander Fraser Tyler, professor of universal history and Greek and Roman antiquities, is said to have written, "A democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves largesse, in other words, benefits, from the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates promising the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that a democracy always collapses over lousy fiscal policy, always followed by a dictatorship. The average of the world's greatest civilizations before they decline has been 200 years. These nations have progressed in this sequence, from bondage to spiritual faith, from faith to great courage, from courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to selfishness, from selfishness to complacency, from complacency to apathy, from apathy to dependency, from dependency back again to bondage. In America, we have been led to believe that our system of government is stable and will endure forever. But history shows otherwise. We also tend to believe that America is the first and only country at this point in history to institute democracy as its form of government. However, Athens was also a democracy, and it too failed. Using history as our guide, we can listen to what many of our founding fathers had to say about the history of democracies. John Adams wrote, quote, "Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There never was a democracy yet that did not commit suicide." Benjamin Rush, who signed the Declaration of Independence, said, quote, "A simple democracy is one of the greatest of evils." Noah Webster is also quoted as saying, "In democracy, there are common tumults and disorders. Therefore, a pure democracy is generally a very bad government. It is often the most tyrannical government on earth." John Quincy Adams said, "The experience of all former ages has shown that of all human governments, democracy was the most unstable, fluctuating, and short-lived." In Federalist No. 10, James Madison wrote, quote, "Democracies have, in general, been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths," unquote. Upon leaving one of the many sessions of the Constitutional Convention held in Philadelphia in 1787, Benjamin Franklin, who was one of the delegates, was asked what type of government they had created for America. "A republic, if you can keep it," was his reply. In a republic, ideally, both the government and its citizens are guided and governed by a set of higher laws. This is what we call the doctrine of higher authority. In a democracy, however, the nation is governed by a sort of mob mentality. and whatever the majority wants or votes for becomes the law. However, what if the majority votes to take your money, or your house, or your children? There is nothing to stop them from getting their way. In contrast, government under a constitutional republic recognizes higher law and protects a person's money, property, and children from the mob. It is for this reason that mob rule degenerates and has historically been the worst type of government. Unless the majority of people as a collective group is restrained by a higher sense of right and wrong, democracy will fail. When seeking to create the American system of government, our founding fathers had a clean slate to work with. They understood that God had already given mankind a perfect moral code when he led the Israelites out of Egypt. Yet, for the last 4,000 years, man, in his arrogance, has been trying to change and fix what was never broken. Under the divinely directed system of government, Israel was established as a kind of republican structure of government, and one that recognized higher law. A nation in which government, culture, and society are shaped and formed on a set of higher laws that apply to all people equally. This system of government protected the rights of people and their property from the elected or appointed officials. They had no king or Congress, only a series of judges and elders who would defer to God's law in order to determine what was both legal and moral. This type of biblically based constitutional republic is what the founders were trying to recreate. They were not merely trying to replace the British monarchy with mob rule, democratic style. Rather, they desired to replace a tyrannical and despotic king with a wise and benevolent ruler known as the King of Heaven and the Lord of Hosts. This is the position that was advocated by Thomas Paine in his Revolutionary War handbook, Common Sense. Quote, near 3,000 years passed away from the Mosaic account of creation till the Jews, under a national delusion, requested a king. Till then, their form of government, except in extraordinary cases where the Almighty interposed, was a kind of republic administered by a judge and the elders of the tribes. Kings they had none, and it was held sinful to acknowledge any being under that title but the Lord of Hosts. And when a man seriously reflects on the idolatrous homage which is paid to the person of kings, he need not wonder that the Almighty, ever jealous of his honor, should disapprove of a form of government which so impiously invades the prerogative of heaven. Unquote. After God freed the Israelites from Egyptian bondage, he warned them of a nation's inclination to fall into a downward cycle. Generally, the cycle follows these steps: peace and prosperity, the promises of blessing. From Deuteronomy 28:1-14. Abundance, Deuteronomy 8:11-14. Apathy and compromise, Deuteronomy 8:11-17. Rebellion, or humanism, and paganism, Judges 3:7. Famine, war, plagues, and slavery, from Judges 3:8. Confession and repentance. The people recognize their need for God. Judges 3:9. God hears their appeal to heaven and saves and restores their nation. Judges 3:9-10. The American Republic was based upon a proper understanding of the doctrine of higher authority found in Romans 13. And Thomas Jefferson's laws of nature and nature's God, which are showcased in the Declaration of Independence. Unfortunately, the system of government, an American republic, that was created by our founding fathers, was gradually uprooted from her principled founding, and consequently, we should expect our future to mimic a historical pattern. The biblical historical cycle of the nation of Israel virtually mirrors the secular cycle. The biblical model shows the cause, while the secular model shows the effect. Therefore, the cycle is explained by Tyler can also be charted as follows. Now, for the listener, I'm going to describe this chart on this page. It comprises with 9 circles interlinked with each other, and within each circle is a word or words. And we'll go from the top all the way around. The first one is bondage. And then it goes to spiritual faith. And then great courage. Liberty. Abundance. Selfishness. Complacency. Apathy. Dependence. And back to bondage. It is only when God raises up faithful and courageous leaders who appeal to heaven for guidance in order to end oppression that a nation once again can enjoy a period of peace and prosperity. Unfortunately, this historical cycle is presently repeating itself in America as we go from bondage to freedom, from freedom to prosperity, and from prosperity back to bondage. History has all but proven that government, or those in power, increasingly and incrementally seek to control and subjugate every area of life until the populace is treated more like slaves than citizens. This is what our founding fathers called tyranny. For many years, an apathetic populace will turn a blind eye to these abuses and incremental usurpations of power until they become so unbearable that the people rise up and say, "Enough." For many years, the citizenry will petition their leaders for the restoration of their rights and liberties until they realize their government has no intention of reversing its institutional control over them. Eventually, something will cause a straw that breaks the camel's back reaction. This generally results in an armed conflict in which the people seek to free themselves from oppressive government control. This is, of course, the story of our American nation. The Declaration of Independence states, "All experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security." Where, then, does present-day America fit into this cycle? Americans today are becoming increasingly aware that their own federal government more closely resembles the tyrannical empire they broke away from than it does the constitutional republic that was created following the Revolutionary War. In a report published May 1, 2013, by Farley Dickinson University, it was found that a sizable portion of Americans surveyed believe that, quote, "in the next few years, an armed revolution might be necessary in order to protect our liberties." Why would a growing number of Americans think that an armed revolution against their own government may be necessary? Why are an alarmingly high number of Americans taking such a pessimistic and even fatalistic view of our future as a nation? Even now, Christian churches, parachurch organizations, and even Christian-owned businesses are beginning to feel the chains of oppressive governmental control. The Supreme Court has overstepped both its moral and constitutional authority and has established itself as a governing oligarchy. Unaccountable justices are imposing secular religion with a new and un-American standard of morality upon the people. The federal court system now demands acceptance and tolerance of everybody and everything except expressions of religious faith and the right of conscience. Make no mistake about it, this cannot be sustained. A revolution is coming. It may come upon us quickly, or it may be decades away. It may take the form of war, or it could be cultural. Nevertheless, this sentiment has been festering below the surface for over a generation. In a report presented to the United States Senate in May 1966, Robert F. Kennedy is quoted as saying, quote, "A revolution is coming, a revolution which will be peaceful if we are wise enough, compassionate if we care enough, successful if we are fortunate enough. But a revolution which is coming, whether we will it or not. We can't affect its character. We cannot alter its inevitability." His words were truer than he realized. The question is whether this eventual and inevitable revolution will be led by violent and unprincipled men, resulting in an armed and bloody conflict, or whether it will be a peaceful revolution led by peacemakers who were guided by divine principles and aided by heaven itself. We advocate the latter. But what will it take to end the tyranny and restore our American constitutional republic? History has the answers. As our founding fathers taught us, it will take an appeal to heaven. From the Declaration of Independence. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the righteousness of our intentions, do, in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right, ought to be free and independent states, and for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. It is for this reason that we are appealing to heaven for the launch of a new civil rights movement. End of chapter 2.